So hello and welcome to a new episode, and I'm going to call it a new series of the Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. I'm your host, Chris Heal, and as ever, I'm joined by the Loose Heads co-founders, Mark Shotton, Dave Nicol, and Rob Shotton. And guys, it's been quite a while since we wrapped up the first podcast by concluding it with our Mars 15, which we selected. And I know we went for a couple of pints afterwards to dissect our selections. And I know, Mark, you were not best pleased with the fact we missed some rugby greats of yours out the team, but I know a couple of them have been in touch around the Mars 15s during the break with Sean Fitzpatrick and Bucky's. Both are getting in touch, guys, so it's clearly going worldwide, this.
Yeah, clearly nobody's allowed in if tries were only worth 4 points.
You're still better about it, Mark, then.
I am bitter, yeah.
And as I said there, we have been on a bit of a break since our last podcast, but the guys at Loose Heads have been putting in some serious work behind the scenes in terms of projects which they've got coming up and the new website which has been launched. And we'll talk about that towards the end of the podcast as well. But guys, what we've been up to during this period of time, I know Mark and Rob, you were out in Marbella on holiday and a few table tennis tournaments were played.
Yeah.
Playing table tennis at all gone.
We can spend an hour talking about that if you like.
In 2013, I beat Rob at the inaugural Marbella International Table Tennis Tournament. And I don't think I've won a set since. Trading on past glories.
And Dave, how's things with you? Any news to bring us?
Good, mate. Just sliding in a house move and preparing for first baby to arrive any day now. So, yeah, busy times.
Indeed, indeed, Dave. And while we've been on a bit of a break, the Premiership has obviously returned, and a team which were causing a lot of people to take notice of them and catching the IR, Bristol Bears. And one of the players who has been standing out for them over the last few weeks, and of course the whole of this season, which seems like it's gone on forever, is Callum Sheedy. And we're delighted to say the fly-off joins us to kick off the next series of the Loose Heads podcast this afternoon. So Callum, thank you so much for giving us your time this afternoon. Great way to start the week with that win against Northampton. So how's things with you? Any looking forward to the weekend?
Yeah, no, pleasure to be here and thanks for having me. But yeah, obviously, good win on Tuesday against Northampton. You know, we did make things easy for ourselves start of that second half, but we got over the line and yeah, we ended up probably the scoreline flattened us a bit in the end, although we left a few tries out there. But yeah, happy and going into a big game now on Sunday against Wasps.
And one of the things we noticed from the game as well, Callum, was you decided to take on Big Niavoro, Big T. Have you recovered from that? I know you fit well.
That wasn't my decision. No, he's obviously, you know, he's a big boy and he carries very hard. So, yeah, I accidentally got in his way a couple of times. But lucky enough, Nathan Hughes and Benno were there quickly to help me, thank God.
We've seen him kind of lining up at number eight a few times recently. As a 10... who, you know, tens aren't exactly notorious for getting in the way of the big boys. What's going through your head when you're seeing a guy like that packing down at eight? Because he's certainly not going for the drive over, is he?
I'm just thinking we better turn this ball over or get a penalty because I don't fancy that one. No, it's one of them. You just got to try and get in his face as quick as you can and hope he falls over you, to be honest. Yeah.
And another player who seems to be hitting people hard and going over players, Callum, is Sammy Radarada. I think that was only one place we're going to start with you. We mentioned before we pressed the record button about the Autumn Nations tournament, which has just been announced. And you were saying, hopefully Fiji don't play too much rugby so you don't miss Sammy too much. I mean, just how good is he? Because he's been getting so many plaudits so far in the Premiership since his return.
Yeah, he's not bad, is he, this Sammy guy? But no, he's honestly different class. Like, you've seen him training before the game started when we were there for a, you know, a few weeks and you thought, like, he's the real deal. And then just seeing him in games now, I still think there's more to come from him. Like, he does stuff in training which is ridiculous. Like, ridiculous. He's the ultimate professional. He's first in, he's last out. His skin folds are the lowest I've ever seen. He's like a god. Like, he's just... I can't speak highly enough of him. He is honestly fantastic.
Is it like that old saying about Jonah Lomu, rugby's a team game, there's 14 of you and you just need to give the ball to Semi?
Yeah, I guess so. And then if that's not working, we can give the ball to Charles. So
yeah, not a bad backup.
It's not bad, is it? But no, obviously, it is important to give him time on the ball and stuff. But at the same time, we know he can't, well, he probably could, but he can't do it himself all the time. So we all need to chip in sometimes.
Yeah, and you've got to say it's something, isn't it, when you've got a guy like Kyle Sinclair joining the team and everyone's talking about someone else.
Yeah, like Sinks has been brilliant as well since he came in. Like, obviously we had John Afoa there at tight end before, and them two, the ball skills they have are just like ridiculous, like skill set wise, they're different class. So yeah, having like someone like Sinks come in, obviously Ben and Max coming in from Saris, and then Charles and Semi with the Stardust, you know, not to mention Chris Cook, Mitch Edey, and you know, the list goes on. So no, our squad's really taken shape, and you know, the strength and depth we have now is a lot better than what it has been in previous years. So it's real exciting.
And obviously you guys at Bristol, Colin, the social media stuff that the club produces is fantastic, and around the new signings, it does go up a notch. So when you were sat there and so going scanning through your Twitter, and it said that you guys are signing someone of Semi Radrada's class after seeing him tear up at the World Cup, you must have been like a fan or on the edge of your seat and dead excited to see what he could bring to the team.
Yeah, definitely. Like, our media team are world class, aren't they? They're brilliant. You know, they're good blokes, but you know, in terms of their job, they're unbelievable. They crack me up everyone they put. But yes, when I seen Semi had signed, obviously I was buzzing, like just watching him in the World Cup, and I was like fanboying him, thinking like this guy is a joke. And then just to have the chance to even train next to him, it's real special. I got to pinch myself at times, but yeah, it's real exciting how good he could be and how good he can make us.
I can vouch for that too. Tom Tainton, Will Carpenter, and Tom Vo. You know, everyone talks about how good they are, and you know, the things that they put together, and they're three very good, welcoming lads who love their rugby, so they're very good at what they do.
Yeah,
I think it's definitely number one in the Premiership for social media teams. And obviously, we're all delighted the Premiership's back. But we had a little chat yesterday, Mark, and you put a bit of cold water on the Premiership's return. You weren't happy with a couple of things you've seen so far.
Callum, I don't think you might not notice it, but when BT, and I think they needed, everybody involved needs a huge round of applause for getting rugby back on. I think it's brilliant. But it's 80 minutes. They could just take the bins away. So every single game, there's a bin. And you're like...
Bin? Where's the bins?
Just either to the left or the right of the players, usually. There's a bin. And whatever the lineup is, seems to find the bin.
I've never noticed that, but I'm sure I'm going to keep an eye out for these bins now.
Not in bin watch. We're going to have Loosehead's bin watch.
Bin watch. That was brilliant.
So when Colin's kicking to the corner now, he's going to be targeting the bin. That might not be there.
Yeah,
that might
be there. You better put him by the fives.
Yeah. Not going to lie, Mark, I was watching the games last night and I did not see one bin, so we'll have to keep that.
There was one at the stoop. I think there was one.
There?
Yeah, I did spot on bin watch. On
bin watch, yeah.
What is this podcast becoming? to bring it back to some normality then, to the way Bristol are playing at the moment, Callum, and it seems like you guys do have that freedom and a licence to frill, if you like, and it's clear evidence on that from that superb performance you put in against Northampton on Tuesday night. So what is it like for you as players to go out there knowing that Pat and the coaching staff have given you that licence to sort of express yourselves in the right way where it's necessary?
Yeah, I think that's one of Pat's, you know, great qualities, is that he does give us licence to go and play. Albeit, like, I think a few times last year we got caught out probably trying to overplay at times. I don't particularly like the word overplay. I know a lot of people, spectators, use the word overplay. I think if something's on, it's on, and Pat gives us the license to go, no matter where it's from. I know like lots of the fans are always screaming like kick it, kick it, kick it, because it's obviously, you know, when you're in your own 22, it's not the norm to start running it out. But no, Pat's definitely made us look at the game differently. And yeah, he gives us the license that if we see something's on and we got a reason, when we come into the review, you say, right, Pat, I thought this was on, I seen this. As long as you've got a reason why you've done something, he'll back you 100%. So yeah, it's great to play, be able to play with that freedom and know that as long as you've seen something and you can back up why you've done it, the boss is going to back you 100%.
That's why they scored tries like they did on Tuesday night. I think it was your pass as well. That set
well, it's because Dan Thomas was absolutely screaming at me and I thought, if I don't pass it to him, I'm never going to be the end of it. So let's just go and have it, Dan. And yeah, he set up a worldie.
Yeah.
And I think probably, Callum, the stats back that up as well in terms of the way you're playing at the moment. I was wishing, and I shouldn't wish, that Marcus Smith was going to miss a couple of his kicks last night. So we could introduce you as the current top point scorer in the Premiership, but you're certainly knocking on the door.
Second, he did, didn't he? But he scored 2 tries, selfish. Like.
Yeah.
Marcus, man.
Well, you're only 3 points behind him, so the race is still very much on, Callum. But then when you look at sort of the other leaderboards, if you like, because I'm quite a rugby nose and I like looking at all these things, but you've got Nathan Hughes, who's up there for, I think it might be one of the stats, I can't remember off the top of my head, but you've got Luke Morahan for clean breaks, and you've got Charles Pietel there for metres gained. So does that back up what we were just talking about there, that you are playing, you know, you do have that freedom to play and licence to play where necessary?
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, you know, when you've got someone with the ball carrying ability of like Nathan Hughes, Charles Pietel, like you mentioned there, I think just the importance is getting their hands on the ball as much as you can. Like, I think Charles was averaging over 100 metres, and I think Semi's averaging over 100 metres already since he's been here. So I think just getting their hands on the ball as much as you can. But at the same time, it's not just like, right, Nathan, here's the ball, go and run through people. You know, a lot of boys do unseen work. You know, you like Jake Walmore, Harry Thacker's, sinks, you know, your second row boys, they're doing a lot of work, dirty work there to make, you know, the other boys look good. So although like these boys are getting the stats and the recognition which they deserve because they're fantastic world-class players, I think it's also important to take note of, you know, your Jake Walmores, who do a lot of the dirty works, hit the rucks for those boys, who probably don't get the credit that they probably deserve.
How much stick did Harry Thacker get?
Well, I think it would have been a very different meeting had we not got a bonus point there, because he knew it straight away. I remember he'd come into half time and he was just sat there like, what have I done? But no, it was funny. After the game, he said, I'm just so glad when that fourth try went in, because he just had visions of the meeting on Wednesday morning just being brutal. But yeah, we haven't given him too much. I think he might cop a bit tomorrow. I've seen a few videos on Twitter flying around. So yeah, we'll get stuck into him.
If that had gone the other way, and you hadn't have got the 4 tries on, how would Pat Lamb have approached the meeting? Would he have just shown the clip of the not passing it and then left it to you lads? Or?
He probably would have asked Thax what he was thinking, and I don't think Thax could have answered it. I don't know what would have happened, but he would have got a lot of stick. Put it that way, Pat wouldn't have been happy.
There would have been no handshake from Pat Lamb towards Harry.
Yeah, probably not.
And we're coming to sort of towards the climax of what has been a stupidly long season for obvious reasons, Callum. But because you're in that race with Marcus, is that something you kind of think about as a player going for these individual?
I was joking about Marcus there. I wasn't going to miss his kick. He's a good lad, Marcus. But no, I don't really look. Like, I see on Twitter a few things. You know, it's Priestland's kicking on fire, so we'll probably end up winning point score anyway. So you can't really look at individual accolades. If you're playing well and the team's playing well, then the points will take care of themselves. It's not something I particularly look at, or I didn't even know I was up there, to be honest, until a couple of weeks ago someone tweeted me. So, I don't really take too much notice. It'll happen if the team's doing well.
Do you think they do, Callum? Do you think Marcus Smith and Rhys Priestland know?
I don't know. I wouldn't say so. Like, it's not something in the changing room we'd be speaking about, like, oh, I'm top scorer, I'm top try scorer. It, like, I don't really know what boys do. It's never mentioned in the changing room if they do. Like, maybe Marcus does. That's why he was greedy last night and took those tries to himself. But I'll have to have a word with him.
I've got a question for you. As you know, I work in the commercial side at Bristol Sport, and I work on the pitch side LEDs. I always wonder, as a kicker, if they put you off or whether you're so in the zone and you're focused that you don't even notice them.
No, it's not something I've actually noticed, to be honest. No. You mean like the boards on the side?
They flash on the side, yeah. Yeah.
It's not something I've ever really paid attention to. You go to like some grounds where maybe the TV, the big TV is just behind the post or something, and that's pretty annoying, or there's something in the stand which is annoying. But no, as the LED lights go, they're harmless. Yeah. I hope I'm not going to start noticing them now you've mentioned them in the bins. Now I'm going to be like a nutter out there.
what would you say has been like the weirdest or most distracting thing that you've come across whilst you've been trying to take a kick?
I remember, I think it was Exeter we were playing, and it was like a stag do in the stand. And like before the game, they got there like 2 hours before kickoff as I was walking on the pitch, and I'd noticed them, and they were like, they were steaming at the time. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like they better leave right behind the posts. And I just remember they were Exeter fans, and just every time I was about to kick, like I could just see them stood up and their beer was going everywhere. And I was just trying to focus on the post. Like, I'm lucky they were stood behind the post. If they were anywhere else, I probably would have kicked it straight to them. But I remember just thinking, like, lined up kick, looking up and just thinking, what is going on? Like, I can't look anywhere else but these blokes. But yeah, that's probably the weirdest one. They were all in fancy dress and everything, and I just couldn't stop looking at them. Weird.
That's brilliant.
You know, rugby's quite good at all that respect the kicker stuff, but there must be the odd ground where you've been where
yeah.
they just don't respect the kicker.
Yeah, I think...
Leicester, probably.
I can't name names because, you know, there hasn't been anyone in the Premiership that's been too bad. I think the weird one, when we went to La Rochelle in France, like, they tend to, like, cheer and, like, clap when the kickers.
Yeah.
And at first, like, my first kick, I thought they were obviously trying to get in my head and cheering that. But then I realised they were doing the same to when their guy was kicking. So it's almost weirder out there if they're silent. So that was a bit of an experience going out there and thinking, like, why is everyone banging the balls and I'm about to kick and stuff? But... it wasn't a disrespectful thing, but it was probably an unusual thing for me. But to be fair, the Premiership grounds, they're pretty sound. Like, there's, you get the odd shout and stuff, but you try and block it out anyway. It's not too bad.
Are you a bit like a golfer when you're kicking? That you can, like Dave said, you can get in the zone, and it's irrelevant whether there's a bin behind the posts or whether there's a bunch of drunken Exeter fans, and you're actually aiming for a point in the stand. Do you do that? Yeah. Is that your methodology? Or?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Like, when there's a goal kick, you sort of... I try and go from a rugby mind to a goal kicker mind. So as soon as that penalty's given and I know we're going for goal or a try score to go for goal, I'll always just try and flick on. Like, I'll never go and jump on boys and celebrate because as soon as a try scored, all I'm thinking about is focusing on the kick. So, like, I see some fly halves and they're jumping on the celebrations and I just think, like, I don't know how they do it. Like, as soon as a try scored, I'm just focused... right, process, kick process. So yeah, I guess it's kind of like a golfer in terms of you just try and block everything out and you're just worried about that one process.
Do you ever get in, do you ever sort of, I don't know, you get a penalty and it's just inside their 10-metre line and you think, I can slot that. And then somebody says, no, go for the touchline. And you're like, no, I can slot that. I'm second in the point scoring.
I guess the way we deal with it at Bristol is say Stephen Lewis, who is the line-out caller, I'll always say to him, like, do you fancy it? And if he gives me like 2 seconds hesitation, it's like, no, posts. So I'll only go to the corner if he's like, I want it, like, we want this. Or if it's a scrum 5 metres out, I'll look at the props and I'll say, do you want it? And if they even look at me and with a bit of doubt, it's like, nah, points. And that's just the process we go, like, Pat's happy with that.
The whole team approach rather than just speaking.
Yeah, like, we'll go into a game and we might say, right, first 20 minutes, we're going to try and go corner first 20 and, you know, get a few early scores. Or we might say, right, we need to build the scoreboard. Like, there's different games, I suppose, require different tactics to decision-making with penalties.
I spent a tiny bit of time, about 15 minutes in a car with Stuart Lancaster. About 3 years ago, and I had to ask him about you being a Welshman or Irishman or Scotsman or Englishman or whatever you might be, but we'll pretend you're a Welshman for now. That kick that Robshaw went for, rather than taking the points and went for the and it all, and Lancaster was like, you've kind of got to trust your players.
Yeah, like, to be fair, like, that's Pat's, like, he'll say to us, like, he said to me on Tuesday, like, why didn't you scrum again, like, before half-time? And, you know, we fancied our line out. So, as long as you give him an answer, like, what he wouldn't like is just like, oh, I don't know. Like, I just heat of the moment. Or if you said something like that, he wouldn't be happy with it. As long as you've got a reason. I guess as a coach, it's hard. Like, you can't be saying, like, you see in rugby league and they're pointing for the two and that's when they, almost the coaches are making the decision. But, yeah, I guess a coach has got to trust his captain and kicker and just, go with whatever they decide.
And doing a bit of research for this podcast, Callum, I look at an interview, I think, that's in this edition of Rugby World. And one thing I wanted to flag up to you was you did mention that John Afoa and Kyle Sinclair could possibly play in a 10 shirt. Now, if Pat Lamb's in the stands and John Afoa's stepping up to take a kick. What do you reckon his reaction will be to that?
I'd back him 100%. Honestly, genuine. He's a freak. Like, he just, I think he's like a fine wine. He's getting better with age, Big Johnny. But no, you see his skills after training. He's like banging drop goals in from the 10-yard line and stuff. And I'm just looking at him like, you've got to stop. Like, you've got to stop. You're making me look stupid. But no, both of them, like I said earlier, like both their skill sets, top class. Like, both hands, very comfortable on the ball. There's not many tight ends in the world who can be as comfortable as those two are. And, you know, we're lucky enough that we've got them both. So, yeah, they're both very classy.
Has that been kind of quite a deliberate approach from Bristol to try and find these players who can, you know, handle the ball, whatever position they play?
I guess so. Like, I think since Pat's come in, like pre-Pat, it would almost be like, right, your backs and back row will go and do passing and your front five will do like scrummaging and beat each other up or whatever they do. Whereas now, it's like from 1 to 15, you need to be able to accurately pass off both hands. You need to be able to run. You need to be able to catch the ball out in front of you. So I think, say we had a 4-on-2 on the edge and we had 1, 2, 3, 4 out there, the front four, Pat would expect a try. Like, he doesn't care what number's on your back. He thinks if you're going to play for Pat, you need to be able to handle the ball, be comfortable on the ball. And I think you can see the way we play, that everyone's comfortable on the ball. And I think that's why we do tend to entertain a lot of people.
They certainly do. One of the players that he's kind of arrived at Bristol and he must be pushing for an England start is Ben Earl.
Yeah,
he seems to have settled in fantastically well. Looks like he's been there for 5 seasons.
Yeah, no, he's a brilliant player, Ben. He's got a lot of confidence and backs himself, which you need. And we're very fortunate enough that we've got Dan Thomas as well, who's an outstanding seven. And them two have a real good battle. Ben can play all across the back row. So, you know, he doesn't really have a weakness, Ben. Like, his handling's brilliant. He's quick, very quick. Over the ball, he's a freak. Defensively, he's excellent. So, like, you look at him and you think, like, where's his weakness? And, yeah, like you say, I'd be very surprised if he's not knocking on the door of an England shirt, you know, this Auden, to be honest. He's very good. But like I say, like, I thought Dan Thomas could have been cap for Wales, like, in the last 2 years. So
I love Dan Thomas. He's like a latter-day Peter Winterbottom. When he grows his hair long and he's got blood on his nose. He looks.
Yeah, he's got his terribly annoying deep Welsh accent that you could hear from a mile off. But apart from that, he's a top bloke and he's class. I think, like I said, I think he should have got international honours 2 years ago. I still think he should now. But yeah, we're very fortunate.
Yeah.
Have you started the campaign yet to keep Ben at Bristol?
Yeah, we're doing a piggy bank every week. Everyone's fivers in so we can stay. Yeah, obviously, I don't really know what the crack is with his contractual situation. I know he's here for the next year. So, we'll get the most out of him for the next year and see what happens then. Obviously, I don't have a clue what's going on with him. But, yeah, it'd be nice to have him, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I bet.
How do you think the season will pan out, Callum? And I know you probably can't tell us because there'll be trade secrets, but it's so tight. I was looking at the table last night after everyone had played. The playoffs will bring a whole new aspect to it as well.
Yeah, I was looking at the table as well. It is, it's ridiculous how tight it is. It just takes one slip up and you're out, or one great game. And, like, I think Wasps and Bath, I said before we record, like, Wasps and Bath have both been outstanding since the return. Like, Wasps going away to Sarries with a lot of changes and winning was, like, fair play to them. And Bath just don't really look like dropping points, so...
No.
It's obviously be easy for us to look at other teams and say, oh, I hope Wasps lose, I hope Bath lose, which obviously be nice if they drop points, but all we can concentrate on is it's still in our hands. So we get 15 points in the next 3 games, we'll be in the playoffs. So I guess that's all we can look at. And
with a kind of mini series of two, if you get in the playoffs and then we're in.
And then like the playoffs, anything can happen. Obviously Exeter already in the playoffs. They're an unbelievable side. They got strength and depth, ridiculous. But we beat them at Sandy Park, so we've got confidence. There's no reason why we couldn't go and win it. So yeah, like obviously, it's each game as it comes at the moment, because like you said, it's so tight up there.
Oh yeah, yeah. And that Bath team, I you look at them. We're mere mortals. We're not involved in the sharp end of the game like you, but we consume it like no other players. Bath, you'd look at their weaknesses and there aren't any really.
Yeah. No, I hate to say it because obviously it's Bristol Bath, but they got a class squad. Like, again, they're getting strength and depth now, which they probably haven't had in the previous few years, and they're looking like real dangerous. Like I said, like watching them last night, they don't have many weaknesses. Their pack are on fire at the moment, and then they got a backline which, you know, you just read the names out and they're world class international. So yeah, they're obviously flying. Wafts are flying. We're doing okay. Sale are flying. Extra are flying.
Whoever wins it will deserve it, I reckon.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? I think it's definitely been a high standard of rugby we've all been playing. So the winner will deserve it, you'd like to think. Whoever it may be.
I don't know if you feel this, Callum, but I certainly feel this from a gnarled old retired player who no one will ever let me play in their team. I barely get in the fat dad's touch team. But I love, absolutely love floodlit games. Watching them, it's just the very essence of rugby. And the last 6 weeks has been, I play a welfare aside for a second because that's a massive issue. But it's just been brilliant watching people play. There isn't 2 days go by without another top class quality game. It's been brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. Yeah, I'm the same, like, especially without the football season. I need to watch some sort of sport. So I've been cricket, anything. But now the rugby's on, it's fantastic. So, obviously, floodlit games do have a bit of an edge to them, don't they? But I got to say, those days are the longest days in the world when it's a floodlit game on. You're just sat here watching your clock. 11 a.m., 11:30 a.m., you're like, oh, come on. So that's the only downside of a floodlit game, that the day feels like it's about 72 hours long. So I like it when it happens, but the day itself is not great.
There's obviously kind of quite a lot of debate at the moment about whether midweek games should continue, particularly into the new year. I know Hugo Monier has been kind of quite vocal about it. How do you feel about it, if they can sort of make it work?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm all for it. Like I said to the boys before, like, I'd much prefer to be playing against Northampton on a Tuesday night than doing a contact session in training. Like, it's a no-brainer. Like, we love playing games. Obviously, the player welfare issue, like, me personally, I feel great. Like, I'm loving the games. I wish I could play 80 minutes every single game. Like, that's what I wish, but I know some boys' bodies are different. Some boys feel it more than others. I'd be happy to play midweek games moving forward to New Year. It doesn't bother me. It's just whether, like you say, what you don't want is teams making 15 changes and then playing against, you don't want mismatches sort of thing. And you look at a few of the results and it is sort of getting a bit mismatchy. That's not what you want. As a player, I'm more than happy to go midweek. If I had it my way, I'd play Tuesday, Wednesday, I'd play Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday every week.
Yeah. I was going to say, Callum, because you've played, I think it's 18 out of the 19 Premiership games, or started at least 18 in the 19. So it does clearly, I mean, we've spoken to a few players that have said, I want to play every game, but there are a few players that say, I'm happy to play on a Saturday and let a midweek team take it. But it seems like for you, you do want to play every game where possible.
Yeah, 100%. Like when I didn't play against Sale, like, although there was changes, like, I was gutted. Like, I hate missing games. It was the first Premiership game I'd actually missed for 2 seasons, not being involved. And I honestly was a mess. I hated it. But I want to play every single minute of every single game. So like you say, I know some boys' bodies take a bit longer to recover, but while I'm still half young, I want to.
You're only 24.
Yeah, that's old in rugby terms, isn't it? Like, you see boys playing now and they're like 18 and born in 2000 and stuff. And I'm like, oh, jeez.
And we'll come on to sort of your journey with Bristol a little bit later in the pod, Callum, but there is a core reason why we do the Loose Heads podcast, as much as we love talking about Bristol and the brilliant rugby you guys are playing. But we do it, obviously, to continue raising awareness for mental health and tackling the stigma around it. And we saw a couple of weekends ago, Callum, that the RPA's Restart Rugby initiative was part of that weekend. And I know it's the players' charity, if that's right, in saying that helps with players sort of transitioning away from the game. And your former teammate, Will Hurrell, spoke really well on BT Sport about the work that the RPA do to support players. So how important is initiatives like the RPA and Restart Rugby, Callum, for players who are stepping out of the game?
Yeah, it's huge. Obviously, like you say, it's easy now for us to get in this like rugby bubble that almost feels like rugby's the only thing in the world. But probably the lockdown we had was a time to like reflect and realise that there's a lot more important things than rugby, and you know, post rugby or even during rugby, if people are going through tough times, you know, we are human. You know, obviously the incident with Will Harrell and having to retire was real tough for him. You know, he's a good friend of mine, and to see that was tough. So, no, like you say, the RPA and the restart do great things, and they're vital to rugby players who are human beings to keep sane and realise that there is life after rugby, there is life during rugby. And, you know, when there is tough times, which we all face tough times, there's way outs and there's positives, there's lights, and they really help with that.
Yeah, absolutely, Callum. And I know you did a little bit for the Loose Heads website talking about the importance of mental health awareness. And yeah, I know you did a little bit for Restart Rugby as well during the lockdown period, which you just mentioned there. And we've got Tom Lindsay on board, who's another former Bear who's done some brilliant columns around the discussion around mental health awareness. So how important is it for these guys to use the RPA and do take that first step? Because I've spoken to a few people and said that's the toughest part of it all.
Yeah, 100%. It's huge. Like, you know what the rugby environment's like. It's almost like a macho, like you're almost, people would almost be scared to look weak if they said that they had mental health issues. You know, that's starting to creep out of the game with, like you say, the support we're getting from the RPA and Restart Rugby and stuff like that. It's encouraging people to talk and seek help if they need it. So we're definitely going in the right direction, but, you know, we can never do too much for players. You know, there's always something, you don't know what's happening in someone's head, you don't know what's happening in someone's life. So just having that out and having someone to speak to is massive. And, you know, I hope that this grows and grows and grows, that no player will ever be scared to speak out if they need to.
How important has it been having a guy like Pat Lam at Bristol, who's obviously sort of very aware of, you know, the mental side of the game, both on and off the pitch?
Yeah, he's obviously great. Like, when he came in, he wanted us to be like a family, and he wanted our families to be involved in the family. So I think that's why we're such a tightly knit group. You know, Pat's always family first. And, you know, Pat's almost like a father figure. You know, if something's on your mind, he's the easiest guy to speak to. Like, you go up to his office and he will speak to you for 10 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, however long you need. He's brilliant with anything, whether it's rugby-wise, why you're not picked, whether it's life, oh, I'm feeling a bit down about this. Yeah, he's excellent with stuff to talk to.
And we had Pat on the podcast, Callum, in the first series, and he talked about kind of how Bristol Bears is really much part of the community. And we talk a lot about the rugby family, but it seems like you guys as a club, you guys as an institution, really do have that at the heart of everything you do.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said there, like, he wants it like a big family. So it's like, I know the word culture gets chucked around in all. So every club says they got a good culture. You know, if you asked me 5 years ago at Bristol, I would have said, yeah, it's a good culture. It's just too easy to say, oh, we've got a good culture. But why have you got a good culture? Like, Pat stripped it down from the start. What's going to make us have a genuinely good culture? You know, we come into work every day. We give our teammates a hug, a high five, a fist bump, whatever it is. Like, I'd go days before where I wouldn't even speak to half the squad, because, not because I didn't like them, because why would I go over to there and speak to so-and-so? Like, whereas now, if you haven't gone in the room and not said hello with a hug or a high five or whatever it is, people are like, why haven't he said hello to me? Like, we're making an effort to go out of our way to speak to people, to connect. And just by connecting with each other, you're forming that bond, you're forming that connection, which is almost like brothers. Like, you wouldn't walk in a room if you hadn't seen your brother and not say anything. So that's what Pat says. He wants, you know, 50 plus brothers, and it generally does feel like that.
Because I was going to come on to that, Callum, when we were going to talk about sort of your journey at Bristol. But do you think kind of that environment of maybe not going over and saying hi to everyone may have been a bit of a negative around the club at the time, which may have sort of been a reason why you weren't able to sustain yourselves in the Premiership the way you have done this time around?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I know I've said before about, you know, there was cliques and stuff. You know, it was, I don't want to sit here and start slagging off how bad it was. It wasn't like a terrible environment, because I didn't know at the time. I thought it was great. I didn't have a clue. But when you're now in an environment which is so tightly knit, you realise that 5 years ago when we couldn't get out of the Championship, and you think, like, why can we get out of the Championship? We had like six internationals playing Championship rugby. And you think that as an academy boy, no one would speak to me really. Like, I might get a hello. A few of the older lads were really nice to me. A few of the older lads probably wouldn't even look at me twice in the corridor. So, yeah, it wasn't great. Like, you'd have your same boys eating lunch together, young lads over there, big dogs over there, these guys over here. Whereas now, you go in the dining hall, first in sits there, second in sits next, third. So you're always connecting with different people. When I first started, I just thought that was professional rugby. I just thought, oh, you're a young lad, no one speaks to you, like, fine, no problem. But now, like, seeing how we've evolved under Pat and seeing that the culture we have generally built up in the last few years, it is an eye-opener to probably how we were 5-6 years ago. And maybe that's why on paper we had such a good team and on the pitch we weren't great.
And I guess as well, Callum, and I might be presuming this here, but you go out, you do the performance, you get the win, brilliant 80 minutes, but does that community element and sort of reaching out to people and helping one another mean as equal significance to you as a team?
Yeah, I think so. Like, when you're on tough times on the pitch, when you're defending your line, when you need to try last minute, you know, you need that trust, and you don't just trust someone you don't spend every day in and connect with every day. Like, I wouldn't go to a random guy in the street and trust him that he's going to throw a line out there perfect and drive them all. You need that trust and you need to know about a guy. So, like, for example, if I'm defending next to Siali Pietau, I've played with him for 4 or 5 years. He's been like I don't want to make him sound old, but he's like an uncle to me. Like, he's brilliant to me. He's been unbelievable for 4 years. I trust that he is going to put his life on the line, that they're not going to cross this line. So just little connections like that, like, inside me, I've got Andy Wren and Harry Randall, two of my best mates. I just think it's a special thing what we've got going. So the trust is huge, I think.
I guess it must be nice having a guy like Pat behind you, you know, the way he's come out to defend Siali with his ban recently, you know, knowing that you've got that backing from the coach must make a world of difference.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, that incident was, like, I'm 100% with Siali there. Like, I don't want to say too much, but I think it's wrong what's happened to him, but he's one of the best blokes I've ever met. And like, Pat's not stupid. He heard all the judiciary and all that. Like, he knows what's going on. I think it's brilliant that he came out and was honest with the public. And yeah, to have that backing from the coach is, he's like a father figure. He'd be like a father figure to Siali. It's brilliant that Siali has the trust of Pat that he can go and speak to him about stuff, and that Pat has the trust with Siali that he's going to come out and back him. So yeah, it's special.
Someone should surely have taken Joe Joyce to task, though, for falling over.
he gives it a big one, Joycey, doesn't he? And honestly.
I think what happened is Piers O'Connor tripped up and then Joycey fell over Piers O'Connor, which is quite funny to watch.
Joycey seen punches thrown and pretended to fall over, I think.
When we did that podcast, Callum, with Pat Lamb, he got quite serious in quite a few parts of the hour. And he was talking about culture. And like you said, I think that's a brilliant comment. Everyone says they've got a great culture. Everyone does. And it's kind of a throwaway thing. If you haven't got a great culture, if you can't say we've got a great culture, then you're not worthy. But nobody knows why. Why? And he just stopped us all in our tracks. And he said, I'll describe culture in one four-letter word. And love. Chris was getting a bit worried. Yeah, love. Yeah. And then he qualified it by saying, if you're on the wing and somebody chips over and you turn around and you slip, then somebody's going to cover that because they love you.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, wow, that's next level culture.
Yeah. I remember, like, when he did his first meeting with us and he said about a real culture's love, and, you know, you see all the boys like, I don't love you, love. Like, everyone's obviously acting all immature. Like, but now, like, genuine, it is love. Like, the more he describes it, you know, you're going to put your body on the line because you love the guy next to you. Yeah. You see, like, teams roll over and concede easy tries, then you've got to question the culture. So, yeah, it is definitely love is Pat's word.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant. And then without naming names, and it's been the same forever, you see the teams that are maybe struggling a bit and they can't quite string three passes together and it's all going wrong. And it's easy when you're winning. Everybody's laughing when you're winning. But when it's not going so well, people say, oh, the culture's rotten. And actually, those lads aren't trying any less. It's just not happening. It's a delicate balance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard because, like you say, like we don't know what goes on in the other clubs. Like, for all I know, they could have the best culture ever. But, yeah, when you do see stuff and you see boys, maybe there's a chance to cover someone's back and they don't. Yeah, obviously, we like to pride ourselves on the fact that we have love and we back each other. And if someone made a mistake, it doesn't matter because you've got the next side to fill in for you. But, yeah, like you say, you do see clubs where, you know, maybe not in this country or whatever, but where a player will get bounced and he'll just run in for a straight for a try. And you think, like, geez, he could have helped him out next to him. And then you've got to think, what's the culture like? What's the love like? But, yeah, we don't know what goes on in those clubs. But, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. How much better? This is a ridiculous rhetorical question because the answer's massive. But how much better is it to achieve a culture like that when you go from Clifton to the training ground in Albion?
Yeah, of course. The new ground is crazy. I'm guessing you've seen the pictures and stuff.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so like I seen the pictures and I thought, oh, that's nice. Like, that's unreal. But then when you even just standing in there and just being in his presence is just like, it's like took my breath away. Just everything is linked from you do your gym session, which is linked to going out to the barn, the indoor barn, where you do your walkthrough with a huge telly on the wall that you can watch live of what you've just done. Straight outside to the training ground, into the shower room. It's all just linked and, yeah, special. It is very special.
Because Pat's talked about as well, Callum, Bristol trying to get to be the number one team in Europe and compete in that Champions Cup, which it does look like you will do next year. So does that training ground, as a stepping stone, if you like, to what the club are trying to achieve? Because it is mightily impressive just on the pitches.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, it's no secret that, you know, Pat's come out with his vision and we've all bought into the fact that we want to be number one in Europe. And yeah, like you say, obviously it's a world-class facility, but, you know, that means for us now, there's no excuse. We can't say, oh, well, I trained rubbish because the heater was off in Clifton Rugby Club or whatever you want to say. Like, what excuse are you going to say now? I trained rubbish because why? There is no excuse. So yeah, of course it's a stepping stone and to where we want to be, but at the same time, it's, you know, a little bit of added pressure in a good way that, you know, Steve Lansdowne's been unbelievable in providing this facility for us. Now it's time for us as players to pay him back and we have no excuses. You know, it's a world-class facility. Now it's up to us to be world-class on the pitch.
And Pat mentioned on our podcast as well, Callum, the first time he met Steve and he was sort of taken aback by the vision that he had for the club, and Pat was very much on board with it straight away. So for you, when you first met Pat and had that maybe one-on-one conversation when he first arrived at the club, I know you've described the vision as making you have goosebumps a little bit as well. So what was that first sort of interaction with Pat Lamb like? Because when we had him on the podcast, we were in awe of him for an hour and a bit.
Yeah, like I think even now when he speaks, he's just got, you know, that voice that you just want to listen to. Like, I've been with him for 3 years now. And he's still, like, when he does his meetings, I'm still there, like. So, yeah, even when he's slagging me off, it's brilliant. But, I remember he come in and he sat all the players down and done his PowerPoint of just about him. He explained of what rugby means to him, why he plays rugby, his family, and then his vision for Bristol. And, like, he was speaking and literally, like, I think I had goosebumps everywhere, like, looking around the room. And you could see everyone was like, at first when he said Champions Cup, we're all like, yeah, we've just come up from the champ. We're in the Champions Cup. Like, what's this guy on about? And then all of a sudden, like, he starts explaining himself and you just want to buy into it. You want to play for him. You want to work for him. He's just that inspirational. And like at the time when he came in, I was probably third, fourth choice, just come back from loan at Jersey. My skill set was average. I probably thought I was better than I was. Couldn't buy a game. And he just sat me down and just said, like, what do you want to be? And then I told him, I want to play international rugby. He said, okay, well, that's good. Do you want to do that? Now, how are you going to get there? And then we put a process in place. And I think that was important because you ask any rugby player, you could go down to anywhere, Clifton, Dings, you say, oh, what do you want to be? And everyone will say, oh, I want to play international. But it's okay having those words. It's like I said about culture. Yeah, we've got a good culture. Yeah, I want to play international. But like, how are you going to play international? And then we put in stepping stones. I had to work on my passing game, I had to work on my kicking game, and we worked through it week by week by week. And then I went from fourth choice to third choice, and then he started seeing me working more. So you have more trust, and then the trust builds, and then, you know, all of a sudden, you're then second choice, getting a bit more game, and then you become first choice, and it just all builds like that. But I would never have been in a position to start in the Premiership if Patton sat me down and said, what's the process? How are we going to get there? And then sat down our steps. So I think if I didn't meet Pat, I'd probably be on a building site somewhere, genuine. I really don't think I'd be where I am now, no way.
Because what I found absolutely incredible, Callum, on Tuesday night, Pat did his post-match interview and said, I wasn't happy with that at all. And there were bits of the game that I wasn't too pleased about. And for me, as a rugby fan and a journalist, you know, you're writing up your report and you're going, well, bloody hell, look at how many tries, look at the brilliant tries that Sheedy set up, or, you know, O'Connor finishes off. But I guess he drives everyone at the club to be a perfectionist. And if you don't want to be a perfectionist, you're off the bus rather than on the bus.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like you say, I remember we played NSI in the Challenge Cup last year. I think we were 57-0 up at half-time. And, like, we're all in, like, high-fiving each other half-time. Like, oh, we're class. And honestly, like, he showed us videos and, like, wiped the floor with us and was like, it's not acceptable, like, sloppy errors. And I think second half, we went out and scored another 12 tries. And it was just, that's just a sign of what he is. Like, no matter, like, last play on Tuesday, we got sloppy and not acceptable. Like, he will not accept mediocrity. Like, and I think that's brilliant, because it's so easy to get ahead of yourself. Oh, we scored an unbelievable try from the kickoff. We're going to win the league. No, like, get back grounded. And, you know, he's the first to say when we do something brilliant, but at the same time, like, we were bang average for 30 minutes on Tuesday, but because we won 47-10, it would be easy to sweep it under the carpet. But no, he's very detailed in his review and his preview. And, you know, I think, like I said, it would be easy to sweep a lot of stuff under the carpet, but that's what makes us want to be better and strive for more, is the fact that our boss is such a perfectionist, like you say.
Yeah, and it's easy to see, well, just listening to you, Callum, reason why you signed the new contract till 2022. And I mean, away from kind of the 80 minutes and playing rugby for Bristol, what makes the city so special? Because I know Steve and Pat have talked about Bristol sport being such a heart of the community, but what makes it such a great place to be a part of as well?
Yeah, I think, like, the people, the love they have for the game, the friendliness. Like, I remember I moved here, what, it'd be 6 years ago now. Like, never been to Bristol before in my life. I'd only drove past there to go back and forth to school. And I was terrified. And I remember going to my first game, and the fans, I was so taken back. Like, 13, 14,000 in the Championship. And they were incredible. They'd go out your way. They'd do anything for you. Messaging you positive messages. Like, the people of Bristol, I just think, are brilliant. Like, they're so positive. Their support is unreal. And yeah, it's like a real tight community. Like, you go out to any grassroots club and do a community session with them, and like, they just love it. Like, they're just beers mad. They're so grateful to have you, ask questions, they want to know more. So yeah, like, it's just a pleasure to be able to go and represent those guys, guys and girls, on a weekend and midweek.
And Rob, I know we've spoken a bit about Bristol in the past, mainly due to the nightlife, but do you kind of vouch with Callum there about it being a brilliant
place as well?
In the running,
I didn't know whether to ask you, Callum, about the nightlife, because we stayed.
But, the nightlife's good. It's good.
Yeah, I saw you put it in the running order. Your thoughts, nightlife, best places to go.
That's how mine and Rob's conversations normally go when we go out somewhere. So,
yeah, I think the Bears lads I know always end up in Lola Low.
Yeah, I remember a few. It's varied. Like, when I was younger, it was always like Bunker, then Pam Pams. Yeah. Now it's Lola's. Yeah, I get a bit too old for all that nightclub life now. I just need a quiet pub just to go and have a few in.
I always end up in La Rocca, which is 80s and 90s stuff, and I don't know how I end up in there. But people have started saying I need a season ticket. But you're right, Bristol's a great place to live. It's got everything you need, and it's not too busy. And then in terms of the rugby, you've got the new training facility and Ashton Gate, which, on a Friday, there's no better place to be. So there you go. The nightlife, Friday night, is Ashton Gate.
Yeah, you avoided that nightlife question pretty well there.
Yeah,
that was good.
Callum opened up a lot more about the nightlife than you did, Rob. It seems like you're hiding.
Yeah, I know. I thought we were all going to get excited about that, but it was just me.
I've admitted that I end up in La Rocca. What else do you need?
Yeah, that's enough.
And just, it's quite an interesting point you made there, Rob, about kind of Ashton Gate on a Friday night. And onto you, Callum, with that. It seems brilliant. I've never been down there and I really want to get to a game at Ashton Gate. But on the telly, when you are playing Bath, when it's the season opener this season, for example, it just seems like such a brilliant atmosphere to play. And of course, we're missing fans at the moment, but we saw a few thousand return last weekend. Quins, we know Gloucester are going to have 1,000 there for Monday's game against Harlequins as well. So how brilliant will it be when we do get fans back in the grounds for you guys, especially with the community being such a heart of the club?
Yeah, obviously it'd be massive. Like the numbers we get, I think I don't know what we're averaging, but it's a lot of people, and I think we're up there in the top two in the Prem. I think maybe Leicester might have more, but so like you see, like the buy-in from the fans is unreal, and the noise, the energy, the atmosphere they create in that stadium is like, it's incredible. It's second to none. So obviously we're missing them a lot at the moment. Just having that, you know, when you go out for a warm-up and having the old chit-chat with a few of them and after the game. And, you know, it's just electric in there. When you're playing, you just get a buzz and you're defending your line and you hear that Bristol chant. It is, you know, it's special. So, yeah, we can't wait for them to be back. Like you say, hopefully all these games go well with the testing of a few thousand and stuff. And fingers crossed we can get fans back in when it's safe and as soon as possible.
Just looking at your next two fixtures, you touched on it a lot at the start of the podcast with Wasps on Sunday and then that European game to come. And I know when you beat the other week where you got your result that you've already surpassed last season's total of points in the Premiership. So is it easy enough to say for a bit outside of looking in that what are your goals going forward for the rest of the season now? Is it to challenge for that Premiership title and see how far you can go in Europe as well?
Yeah, well, I think at the start of the season, we set our goals out and our goal for this year was top six finish. I think I don't know if we're mathematically there, but we're doing pretty well on that. But like we say, top six doesn't mean sixth. Top six can mean number one. So, you know, if anyone in that dressing room tells me that they don't want to win the title, then I don't think they should be there. Like, you know, we want to win that title and we've got the mindset, like I said earlier, every game. But if you look at the bigger picture, there's no reason why we can't go on and win it. And yeah, we want number one. And obviously with Europe, again, quarterfinal, knockout rugby, anything can happen. So why not win that as well? So yeah, we want them both.
Yeah, I'm quite regretting in February when I think you beat Northampton and Bristol were 40-1 to win the title. I think between the loose heads guys, we could have maybe chucked a fiver in each. Would have done all right on that? Maybe.
Could have nicked a few quid there.
And I know your game's on Sunday, Callum, so maybe Saturday will be taken up by your beloved Leeds United. I just wanted to get that in there.
Yes.
Quite vocal on
massive
there. Twitter during the lockdown with Leeds getting promoted to the Premier League. So we're looking forward to that one on Saturday. Get the chance to watch it?
No, I'm not looking forward to Liverpool away first up at all, to be honest. anyone but that. It's going to be, yeah, I think it's going to be a nice welcome to the Premiership. But yeah, no, I was actually buzzing. 16 years. I remember the day they got relegated and I was crying my eyes out. I think I was 6 years old, 7 years old. I remember crying my eyes out and yeah, I've been waiting a long time since for him to be back. So, yeah, really excited for to get started once Saturday's over and out the way.
I don't think we've told you that all of us on this podcast are all Liverpool fans.
Oh, my. Can I leave now or not?
That's why we're waiting towards the end, Callum.
Yeah. No, it's, Liverpool away first. They've done get much tougher than that, is it? Hopefully we can catch you cold and maybe nick a 0-0 or something stinking like that, but not confident.
And I'm sure as well, Callum, you might be able to be tuning into the Pro 14 final after the Liverpool Leeds game with your old mate Ian Mangan kicking the winning kick last week to send us to the final.
Yeah, no, I seen that last week. That was brilliant for him. He's, yeah, like you say, he was a big mentor for me the last few years and I owe a lot to him. I still text him and ring him, you know, every other day, keeping him in touch and stuff. And yeah, to see him kicking those kicks, like I never doubted him for a second. I've never seen someone as cool under pressure as him. Like in training, like I think I took me about 24 weeks before I beat him in a kicking comp. He was doing my head in, like just doesn't miss. And when the pressure's on, he kicks even better. So yeah, real chuffed for him. And good to see him doing well. And hopefully he can go well again on Saturday.
Absolutely, Callum. Well, Mark touched on it earlier about kind of your international links, obviously Ireland, England and Wales. Is something that you connected to. And I know you get asked about that a lot, Callum, in interviews. So we're not going to do that because we're going to do something.
I was going to give you an exclusive.
Well, no, by all means, has Eddie given you the call or has Wayne spoken to you?
No, it's yeah, I try and avoid that question as much as I can.
So we're going to give you a much more important question and the honour of picking your Mars 15 to take on the Martians. It's, as I said right at the top of the podcast, it's got some good traction from some really big stars of the game, and we're hoping your team will do the same. Now, I think you've already given us a little bit of an exclusive regarding who might be in your team on the Looseheads website, because I think you got asked the question. He said Ellis Genge was someone he'd like to take to Mars.
Damn, that was my number one. You've ruined the surprise, my number one here.
Sorry, Callum. Mark, Mark normally does this, Callum, so I'm going to hand it over to you. He introduces it much better than I do. So, Mark first, and then we'll go over to you, Callum.
Well, yeah. Callum, I, just before we start, I was a massive, massive Ian Madigan fan when he was in Ireland playing for Leinster. And almost, I love hearing you say he was a big mentor of yours, because I felt he was somebody who could, whenever he played for Ireland, he could properly come on, change a game and win it. And he was a match winner. And he never really got that starting. I mean, he had a tough old paper route, didn't he, with trying to get in front of Johnny Sexton. But he had the ability to change a game and make it play the way he wanted to. And what a kicker. And there's huge similarities between the way he plays the game and I look from afar at the way you've played it. And it's great to see that you still keep in touch with him. I think that's the essence of rugby.
He's unbelievable, like you said. And the bad thing is, I think he's still my mum and dad's favourite player, because I see my mum's background on her phone and it's my mum, dad and Ian Madigan. And I'm thinking, what? I'm your son. Yeah. He's a great bloke.
The essence of the Mars Away 15 is the premise is that the Martians have landed because they haven't heard we've got coronavirus, and they decided they want to own Earth. So they've challenged us to a game of rugby. It's 80 minutes to decide this future of civilization. We've lost the toss with rock, paper, scissors, and the game is going to be away. So just after you've played Wasps on Sunday, we leave for a 4-week shuttle trip to Mars. So it's any player, any gender, any era, which will define, your selection will define you as a rugby player. There's no pressure.
Okay. Right. So I've got number one, which we already know, Ellis Genge. So I'll just tell you, I picked my front row based on, I reckon it could be a few rough and tumble battles, so I've gone quite a tasty front row with one social second there. So we got Genge at one. I used to love Leeds Rhinos growing up, right? He never played rugby union, but I think he'd be a good hooker. Barry McDermott, I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Yeah, he's a great diets guy. Brilliant guy.
Yeah, so I used to love him. I remember being a little boy and just wanting to watch Barry McDermott. And I thought he was an absolute beast. So yeah, him. And then social sec is the self-proclaimed away day specialist, is what he calls himself, John Afoa. And then second rows, obviously we need a tasty couple. They'll be our bouncers on the night out. Martin Johnson, Paul O'Connell.
Yeah, nice.
Wouldn't mess with them two. This one, just because I used to love the fact that he used to drive a smart car, Sebastian Chabal, and he had to duck to get in it, and just a beast. Seven, I got a guy I was lucky enough to play with who was an incredible bloke, unbelievable on a night out, and could go and have 12 points and still rock up the next day and smash a watt bike, George Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And my number eight is because I used to live School of Hard Knocks, and he used to make me want to go and fight my TV with passion, was Scott Quinnell. Nine, Gareth Edwards, just because I've seen videos of him when I was younger, and the Millfield pitch we used to play on was actually called the Gareth Edwards pitch, so a bit of a link there. And then my hero at 10, who I used to love growing up, was Carlos Spencer. Yeah, and I reckon he's loose on the pitch, so I reckon he could be good on a night out. And my 12, another one I was lucky enough to play with, who was great to me when I was younger. He used to actually shower with Evian water because he didn't trust the water from showers, was Gavin Henson.
That doesn't surprise me, Callum.
Even weirdly. Before coronavirus times, he had his own water bottle with Gav on it. No one could drink Gav's water bottle. And then 13, obviously, you've got to go Brian O'Driscoll just because he's the best ever. He is the GOAT. In case we get any trouble on night outs, we got the quickest man I think ever played, Brian Habana, on one wing. The other wing will be our captain because he's the best captain I've ever worked with, and he's terrifying, but the nicest bloke in the world. He'll do anything for you. David Lemmy.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, and then fullback, someone I met, I never actually got to see him play much because he's before my time, but I met him by being friends with his son in school, and he just came across like a great leader, great bloke, and I know he was a great player because I've seen videos. Gavin Hastings at fullback. Yeah, good friends with his son. And then my support staff. So we've got manager. I used to love the Ricky Tomlinson. I used to love him in the Mike Bassett England manager.
Yeah, great shout.
He's 100% getting me pumped up for a game. My water boy is Tom Hanks from Run Forest Run, because you know you've got to keep that water flowing when we're hungover. Kit man, we might run out of money, so we've gone Jeff Bezos, or Bezos, whoever you say it.
Yeah.
And then the most important man of the party is the coach, and it is the god himself, Marcelo Bielsa. So that is the team which is going to take over the world.
who's your captain? Are you putting David Lemmy in as captain?
Lem's his captain, but John Afoa is social sec, and he's the away day specialist, so he's the off-field captain.
And because you've refused to answer your national allegiance, can we guess through the amount of Welshmen you've selected?
Well, there's the same amount of... There's more Irish in there, isn't there? O'Driscoll, O'Connell, McDermott. I'm not saying... And there's a few English in there, so...
Keep them
I'm back on the fence.
I was going to ask a more important question, Callum. I mean, this is very hypocritical from me with a South Manchester accent and supporting Liverpool, but where does the Leeds connection come in?
So my dad is a massive Leeds fan, and I'm guessing when he was younger they were good and he was probably a Glory fan. Completely ruined my childhood, thanks, Dad. yeah, he was a big Leeds fan, and I, from whatever I can remember, I've been forced into a Leeds shirt, so yeah, I didn't have much choice in the matter.
Well, I was going to say I wish you the best of luck for Saturday, but that would be lying, Callum. But I do wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you this afternoon. Just before we go, Dave, I just wanted to talk about sort of the stuff Looseheads have been doing over the last few weeks since we've had a break. And one of the standout things has been the hashtag Enough campaign, which I know was turned around very, very quickly with you guys. So just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, like you say, a bit of a quick turnaround on it, but we've obviously seen what's gone on across social media around sort of kit launches and equal representation in sports. And we just kind of wanted to throw a little bit of our weight behind the Enough campaign alongside Flo Williams from the Perception Agency. So if you get yourselves over to Looseheads and get one of our Enough t-shirts, 10% of every sale we'll be going to kind of campaigns aimed at raising the profile of women's rugby.
Yeah, absolutely. On the new brand spanking new website, Dave, it looks very smart.
Very new website. Yeah, a few rather long days and nights, but we got there.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, yeah, as Dave says, please get involved with all the merchandise that Looseheads have got. It's all available on their website across all the social media as well. So do get in touch with the guys if you want any merchandise. But Callum, once again, thanks so much for giving us your time this afternoon. We really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me. Been a pleasure.
And as always, to Rob, Dave and Mark, cheers for your time, guys. It's been a while since we've done one, so good to be back.
Yep. Cheers, mate.
Chris.
Great stuff. And that has been another Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union.